hand them to someone. You're going to want it. Yes, you're going to want to have a Bible today. Adam Steffi. Casey thought that he won our weekly prize for who came the furthest to come to church today. You know, the week's vacation that we give every week. But I think you have some interesting news. And will you please introduce your friend? Oh.
Before that, he was in Munich, Germany. Nikki and I met while I was on my staff over in Germany, and he's one of my best friends on planet Earth. And he actually volunteers with Young Life over in Munich, with German kids. He's here visiting for 2 weeks, and get to know him. He's a good guy.
Yeah. Great to have you, Nikki. Casey, good to have you. Good to have all the folks and a lot of guests today. Neat. Yeah. Thanks for your prayers last week. Sue and I went to Arkansas for a week for me to write and her to kind of recoup. And Kristen, who's just now sitting down, made a, in her words, two outs in the bottom of the ninth decision to join us with her three kids under four. That changed the dynamic of the week just a little bit. It was a great week. It was a week I'll always treasure being with them and in that place. And so, but thanks for your prayers. I did get some good work done, and I think Sue had a good week as well. So several of you have asked. I thought I'd just share it with everyone. It was a good week. Open to Numbers 25. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers. For a story which some of you have probably never read or heard. We're going to start with verse 1. While Israel lived in Shittim, this town proves the sense of humor of the Lord. And you will see why. The people began to whore with the daughters of Moab. Interesting that song we just heard, the guy talked about love being a verb. I don't know if you picked that up. Here we have whore as a verb. So I want you to think of what possibly could that mean as a verb, and it means that. And worse. It is, it's very strong language that the people's love for their truest lover had gone astray, and they were loving that which they shouldn't have been loving. These invited the people to the sacrifices of their gods, and the people ate and bowed down to their gods. So Israel yoked himself to Baal of Peor. Baal, of course, is a pagan god. And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. And the Lord said to Moses, take all the chiefs of the people and hang them in the sun before the Lord, that the fierce anger of the Lord may turn away from Israel. And Moses said to the judges of Israel, each of you kill those of his men who have yoked themselves to Baal of Peor. This little church meeting they had, little gathering, let's kill some people. And behold, one of the people of Israel came and brought a Midianite woman to his family in the sight of Moses and in the sight of the whole congregation of the people of Israel while they were weeping in the entrance of the tent of meeting. When Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, son of Aaron the priest, saw it, he rose and left the congregation and took a spear in his hand and went after the man of Israel into the chamber and pierced both of them, the man of Israel and the woman through her belly. Thus the plague on the people of Israel was stopped. Nevertheless, those who died by the plague were 24,000. So the Lord has said, hey, we're going to stop this whoring after false gods who can only destroy, cannot give life. They're worthless, but because people bow down to them, they become powers. This isn't my people's best. We have to put a stop to it. And so they have this terrible purge of the leaders who had just lost their way and had gone whoring. And yet, even after that, a man brings one of the Baal-worshipping women, and in the sight of Moses and the sight of the congregation, he has sex with her. And Phinehas can't handle it. And he takes a spear, and he goes through both of them. And that act brought an end to this episode of whoring. Can you imagine anything being more graphic, more vile than how the people of God, you know, I love to talk about the people of God, and I love to talk about the Old Testament calling of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Moses, and all that. But can you imagine how far off they had gotten that this kind of thing, and what this man and this woman did, had become normal in this community of so-called chosen people? That's pretty serious, isn't it? Let's go on here. And the Lord said to Moses, Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, son of Aaron the priest, has turned back my wrath from the people of Israel, in that he was jealous with my jealousy among them, so that I did not consume the people of Israel in my jealousy. Therefore say, behold, I give to him my covenant of peace. And it shall be to him and to his descendants after him the covenant of a perpetual priesthood, because he was jealous for his God and made atonement for the people of Israel. I wonder who his offspring are, even in this world. I wonder if in the terrible Holocaust, you know, there were many, 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 many rescued. And I just wonder, I'm conjecturing here, but I just wonder, were some of those rescued Phinehas's progeny? Don't know. We'll find out someday if it matters. Wow, what a hard story. What a severe, severe story. You know, a lot of people don't like the Old Testament because it has stories like this in it. If you look on the back of my Volkswagen Beetle, my old trusty bug, you'll see right beneath the rear middle light a very worn out sticker that says, if you can still read it, love wins. I got that sticker at Mars Hill Church in Granville, Michigan. Becky was going to Hope College nearby, and that's where she worshiped, was at Mars Hill. And the founder and pastor of Mars Hill is Rob Bell. Rob Bell is quite a well-known leader in the church today, and Rob Bell has just published a book called Love Wins. And this book has caused quite a stir. If you go on the blogosphere, quite a stir. I've read the book. I found the book very compelling and very disturbing, both. But as I said to Liesl, as we were Facebooking back and forth about Butler and about Rob Bell, Liesl's a graduate of Butler, by the way, that's why she's so excited, yeah. I'm not going to take my Love Wins sticker off my car because of this book. The thing that's controversial about this book is that Rob Bell comes to the conclusion that when all is said and done, when all of eternity is settled, the love and sacrifice of Christ will have won everyone. It's called universalism. And that, and this is not a new thing, and he points that out, that after, what he says is that after people die, he believes that they'll have another chance. And then another chance, and another chance. Because he can't imagine a world in which Christ's victory on the cross is not applied to everyone and everything. And it's an interesting read. His view, his view of Christ's victory really stirred me. And it's interesting, the books at the end that he points to for us to read about these things are by some really profound authors who would not agree with him in the least about his universalism. But I don't want to throw Rob Bell to the dogs. I want people to talk to him. I want him to listen to him. I want him to, want them to understand that his view of Christ is enormous and challenging and good. I do believe, in fact, Athena, our late great Athena, she still lives, but she lives in Indiana. Athena had some really typically Athena funny things on her Facebook page about this book. And it's kind of set off a stir amongst folks. But she points out that she was trying to make her Bible only have the things that Rob quotes and that she got down to a very small Bible. And didn't, it's not the full counsel of God kind of thing. So, but I'm glad I read it because the temptation is knee-jerk, hear the word universalism, knee-jerk and say, oh, shut him down. Just shut him down. Clear the temple. Shut him down. So, I'd like you to imagine Rob Bell sitting right here. And he's kind of on one end of the spectrum. Did you hear this week about why the people in Afghanistan are really mad at us right now? That they're fussing about something that happened over here this week? Yeah. People in Afghanistan now are saying, America, you are wicked because a pastor in Florida had a ceremonial burning of the Quran. Now, I would like to take this pastor and put him on this side of me and say, you are extreme. Oh, Rob, you're extreme. Sir, you are extreme. And we really have quite the ends of a spectrum here. You know what I think about both of these guys, though? They have zeal. The pastor who burned the Quran, I agree with him that the Quran is not God's holy book. I agree with him that it has led billions in the course of time to false understandings. I don't agree with him that this is the way to go about changing that. In his zeal, I think he's probably done more harm than he has good, because I honestly don't know what good he's done. You don't cause people to leave their centuries of cultural understanding by violating their sensitivities. You don't do that. Nor do you cause people to leave 2,000 years of teaching about final things by wishful thinking, which is, I think, what Rob has done. But both of these fellas have zeal. I would count them both as brothers. And we will just have to sort out what time brings concerning each of their approaches. Zeal. Our series, our short series during Lent, calling it Like a Flint for the visitors here, Like a Flint. Jesus set his face, his determination, his mission unchangeable. And it involved, I'm going to Jerusalem and I'm going to accomplish some things. And we've had him with that determination. He has become the great fulfiller, completer of prophecy. We've had him recognizing the special place that is Jerusalem, coming there, weeping over Jerusalem because they just didn't get it. Now, isn't it an interesting contrast? The people of his day were not as openly vile in their embracing of false gods as the people of Phineas's day, but they'd lost their way. They had for hundreds of years been looking for a Messiah who would come and throw the yoke of other people's dominion off of them so that they could be powerful. They had turned the temple into something that wasn't God's best. And we're going to read about that. But I want us to think about, as we're always with Jesus, looking for the fact that not only did he know that this trip to Jerusalem was his last for now, but the fact that he went to the cross of his own volition and that he was going to accomplish some things. And last week we said one of the things he was going to accomplish was judgment on this people. Now, we read that in Numbers, didn't we? God's judgment was an exacting of 24,000 lives. What's Jesus' judgment? Well, he tells them that this city, this holy city, this great city, is going to be destroyed. And it was, just one generation later. But his approach is different than Phineas's, because he starts by weeping over the city. He is so moved by the lostness, the cold-heartedness, the you-just-don't-get-it-ness. It causes him great pain that, in his words, I visited you, I'm here, that's what Ben said, here I am, and yet it hasn't really mattered. Not like it should matter. When God becomes flesh and dwells amongst us, and we can see his glory, and we can see that no one like him, we should worship him. We should decide that maybe our ways need to be his ways. we should decide that grace and truth are what we seek and hold on to. And quite frankly, a very small remnant of people had come along. Amazing, isn't it, that 2,000 years later, billions of people are worshiping that grace and truth today. Amazing. Amazing. Luke 19. So I was thinking about the sermon this week. I asked Sue and Kristen what they thought of this story. The story of Jesus being rough and ready Jesus. Even you could say violent Jesus. Angry Jesus. Not gentle Jesus, meek and mild. Tough guy Jesus. What did they think of this story? What'd they think? We're all kind of feeling like we aren't totally able to get our arms around this. Because the question is this: is Jesus doing something that he wants us to model? Let me tell you a story. The gal who was matron of honor in our wedding and her husband, who are dear, dear friends. For 15 years, they wouldn't talk to us. And the reason they wouldn't is because we were spiritually ignorant. Now, there's some truth to that. But here's the truth. They became part of a group that felt like they had a special insight into the way things really are. And, well, as my friend says now, a little leaven leavens the whole lump, which is a biblical principle. And a little leaven of legalism in their group leavened the whole lump of the group, and legalism reigned, not grace. Legalism, a list of things to do and not do. Here's how we live. We don't go outside this list. That became the way. They were so full of righteous indignation towards others that in the city in which they lived, there was a large Assembly of God church that many would have said, this is the growing alive church in our community. Thousands of people come here. Great church, and I would say that about this church. I knew about that church then. On an Easter morning, my friend and his brethren marched into this church in the middle of the service with a big cake. Now, we had cake Sunday a few weeks ago, didn't we? And it was wonderful. Molly made the cake of the century. No one can possibly beat it. I dare you to try. Deliver it to my office. I will be the judge of this. Or pie, either one. Pie works too. They're all in the same category. They interrupted the service with this large white cake shaped like a dome. Interrupting, went up front and began to preach that you all are whitewashed tombs full of dead men's bones. Remember Jesus' words like that? And inside the cake were chicken bones. They were arrested. Did they have zeal? Oh my. They had zeal. And friends, matron of honor in our wedding, people we loved, but they wouldn't talk to us. Then there was a day where we were were getting ready to leave for a Young Life picnic on a Sunday night. And we just try to get the four Berry kids ready all at once. Without chaos, it just doesn't happen. We're in different pieces, headed out the door, and we see a strange car pull in. And it's this couple. Last time I saw her, she was dressed in what I would call rather Amish style. She got out, she had shorts, pink or turquoise or something. Neat. And he? Neat. I wear them as often as I can. And he had on his old, classic old golf shirt and shorts and flip-flops. And it was like, what has happened? It was scary. Because we thought our friends were dead. And they had come alive. And they walked up onto our front deck as I stood there, kind of stunned. And they didn't say a word until they hugged us and said, "We're sorry." We said, "Well, we're late for a picnic. You come too. Don't want to be late for a picnic." And they did. And he ended up working for me. Andrew, you know him. He was an amazing salesperson for us. Had the Komatsu account. Loves to golf. You know who I'm talking about? Yeah, that's who we're talking about. They had come to the end of severity and had come to the place of grace and swallowing their pride. Do you know how many people they had to go to? They went to all of them, including their family. Beautiful that this happened. Zeal, religious zeal. Boy, do I want Jacob's Well to be zealous for the Lord? You betcha. You betcha. Just filled with zeal. But for what? What is our zeal for? God's timing is amazing. Got a phone call this week from a young person in the church who didn't know I was in Arkansas, but that's okay. Bother me when I'm there. That's fine. No, I said, please do. You know why? You know why he called me? Because he had led a young girl to Christ this week. That was worth the call. That's the kind of zeal we want to have. This morning, fella says, "Hey, we need to talk." Well, let's talk. And among other great things, a guy that I know he has been witnessing to and caring for years trusted Christ at his house yesterday. Isn't that the kind of zeal we want? The zeal for people's souls to be where they belong. Given over to the one with whom we trust our souls, Jesus. Didn't know how I was going to work those stories in. I worked it in, Liesl. Worked out pretty well. Okay, Luke 19. Okay, last week we talked about verses 41 through 44 and Jesus' words of judgment that were fulfilled in 70, really kind of started in 66, and the Romans just left it not one stone upon another. And the diaspora, the scattering of the people, it began. It was a busy week, wasn't it, for Jesus? Verse 45. So after he has wept and come to this place of hurt for the condition of the people, he goes to the house of God. You know, it's an interesting verse in the Bible. Where does judgment begin, according to the Bible? With the house of the Lord. When we want to be so judgmental about those outside the church, we better make sure we judged ourselves inside the church for our soul's health. Jesus has done that, and he has said, I have to go to the temple. There's a situation there that I have to address. And he entered the temple and began to drive out those who sold, saying to them, it is written, my house shall be a house of prayer. But you have made it a den of robbers. And as Ben said, it's not that they were selling things for sacrifice, because sacrifice was supposed to be happening there. It's that they were crooks. It's that they had taken the sacred and turned it into personal profit. I'm afraid that that still happens today too. But then there was this place, my temple, the special place for God's people to come and bring their lives. And friends, I hope that's what you do when you come here. I hope that you don't leave your life outside the door and say, okay, I'll go through this again. Whew. I'm going to go in there and I'm going to do whatever they tell me to do. I'm going to sing whatever. But boy, I'm hooking back up with my real self when I get out there. I'm afraid that that can happen. Mm-mm. That is a losing game. My house shall be a house of prayer. Ben referenced the John entry, and it is interesting. You read commentaries, and frankly, most say they think that that Jesus did that temple cleansing early in his ministry? I don't know. I kind of have a hard time thinking that he did it twice. I don't know. Check it out. I think that maybe John is saying, and I've been in John so much. Oh, that sounds terrible. I've been reading the Gospel of John so much. Sorry, Becky. Becky's always insane to me. I didn't mean to say that. Envelope, yes. I've been studying John, and it seems that he orders things not so much always sequentially, but rather by the storyline. In the John entry, his disciples see what he does. And they said, this reminds us of something. This reminds us of Psalm 69, verse 9. Jesus is fulfilling this prophecy. Jesus is living out the zeal for God's honor. This is who he is. And the zeal for the house of God and its sanctity has consumed him. Let's go to verse 47. And he was teaching daily in the temple. So he comes in and he cleanses it, and then he dares to go back. Now I want you to think of, let's just say, Uptown Normal and the farmer's market. And you've got your own farmer's market behind your church. and you decide we don't want the competition. Therefore, Lynn Nebel and Bruce Strum are headed down there and they're flipping over tables and they're telling people, you're done, you're done. Now, do you think that it would work well for them to go set up their own tables the next day and that nobody would bother them? Or that? No, it wouldn't work. And so, guys, don't do it. I heard you talking about it. Don't do it, okay? The courage, the determination, the zeal of Jesus to go to this place and accomplish what he set out to do, which was to clean it, cleanse it. If you look this up online, you see this word over and over, Jesus cleansing the temple, Jesus cleansing the temple. The study Bible, or our Bible here says that. And then he goes back because he needs to teach. And this causes a problem. Friends, here's the thing. Jesus knew all of this was going to happen. He knew that he was going to go into Jerusalem and stir things up. How severe was his stirring? They decided to kill him. You see, if he had just stayed in Galilee and he's got this following and he's doing some miracles and that's kind of neat. No, he came to the heart of darkness and he stirred the pot. He did so intentionally. And why? Why so? Because he had set his face like a flint to change everything. And you know what? We live in the reality of the change. We live in the reality of a completed mission. And what can sometimes be our just kind of lackadaisical, well, I'm a Christian, and I like being a Christian. I think it's really, really important. I'm glad I'm a Christian. We need to be reminded, in fact, we need to be shaken into understanding that this story is the story of life and death. Future, no future. Restoring all things. It is the greatest story. It is that. And when Jesus did all these things this week and the next couple of weeks, 3 weeks, we're going to intensify what's going on here. But he knew exactly what he was doing. He knew that he had to speak the truth, do the truth, and tear down the falseness. And he knew it would cost him his life. So how much do we appreciate that? How much do we appreciate the determination of Jesus? Today we have an opportunity to prepare our hearts and receive with humility and hearts of appreciation the essence of our faith. Today we have an opportunity to say to him, Lord, I receive your sacrifice. Nourish me with it. Encourage me with it. And by the way, Lord, I'm bringing my whole self here. I'm going to step outside, reconnect with what I left out there, and I'm bringing it in. And I'm going to receive your forgiveness. I'm going to receive your promises. And by your grace, I will have zeal for your honor. I asked, what kind of zeal do we want to have? We want to have zeal for the Lord's honor. How do we do that? How do we show that zeal? Well, of course, we live according to the dictates of Jesus as best we can. But it also means this, I believe. We talk about him. Those two folks in the church who shared Christ with friends who were lost can now say their friends are found. We need to have the kind of zeal that says, I will live like Jesus, loving my neighbor as myself, loving God with everything I have, and I will talk about Jesus. I'm not going to tear up other people's books, but I will share this book with them. I'm not going to tell everybody that it's okay whatever you believe, Rob, sorry. But I am going to tell them about Christ's victory over everything. Everything. Bob, would you come up, please? Where's Bob? Oh, you're up. Okay. You're not up, but you're up. Okay, thanks. Apostle Paul says something interesting about this victory. He says, whenever we take communion, we remember that victory. A victory which includes coming back to set up his eternal kingdom. He says, whenever you do this, remember that. Remember the death and look ahead to the victory. And so that's what we'll do today. Typically, we have some prayer teams. It so happens they're both gone today. So today we won't be doing that. We will invite all those who have trusted Christ, no matter your heritage or your background, you're welcome to take part here. If you're under any kind of discipline from another church, I would ask you to abstain until that gets sorted out. Or if you're really mad at somebody else and you have to make peace before you come to the altar. Okay? On the night that Jesus was betrayed, he took the bread for Passover and making sure he had